Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lowell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you today. My guest today, I've been listening to the last few days to his work, and he's just blowing me away with the stuff that he does. I'm focusing here as a guitarist here, but he's a major arranger, songwriter, and he just does some great things in terms of we were just talking about a little before, he kind of orchestrates everything. I just want to welcome Rob Bonfilio for coming to the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
And
great to be here.
Let me just start out with a clip, and then we'll just get right in it, because there's a lot to cover, and I got a bunch of questions for him. So here we go. Just great. I mean,
thank
the
you.
Layering. Now, understand the albums are really heavily vocal. I mean, they're song. It's driven by the song in the lyric. And I'm cutting pieces to show the guitar part. So I'm kind of clipping, just showing you little snippets of stuff. But there's a lot more to the song. I just want to say that up front.
Yeah.
Anyway, real quick, before we get into your background and stuff, I just got to know what you were using on that.
You mentioned the flange, right?
Yeah, that flange.
Well, the reason it sounds so good and how it sounds so authentic is because it is genuine flange.
So you did the tape flanging.
Well, I did it. I discovered a way to do it in Pro Tools. This is all done in Pro Tools. There's mm-hmm. no tape involved. I think in Pro Tools, like 7 or 8 and above, there's an option called warp, where you can stretch or contract the file. And what I did was I bounced the track minus the vocals and a few other things to 2 tracks, sent the 2-track back into the session, and I kind of chopped and spliced it up, and then I kind of, each little section, you can tweak a little bit and warp, either stretch it out or compress it. And as you do that and you play it along with the rest of the track, it starts to flange. And if you can manipulate it in such a way, it won't sound choppy, and it'll sound like a genuine tape flange.
Yeah.
Which is basically what it is. It's a file flange.
Right. But it's interesting because it does negative flanging.
It goes
below, and it almost cancels at the zero point. And
there's nothing...
No.
In all my years of listening to rock music, nothing excites me more than that sound. It's like it almost clears your sinus passageways. It's so exciting. I love flange. You know, I would flange every song if I could, but I think it would get monotonous.
But you got that. I mean, the pedals and some of the outboard effects, mm-hmm. they don't go down far enough. They don't do that negative.
Right. Well, you can always detect one that's kind of fake.
I mean, that sounds very analog. It really, you know, it sounded like the real... Your palm and the flange.
It's digital analog flange, if you could call it such a thing. Because it's truly flanged, but it's digital.
Tell us a little bit more of your background.
Sure.
Obviously, you studied to be able to... Well, we're going to hear some more stuff. But you can hear at the tail end of the thing where he was doing the vocal arrangements and stuff. There's obviously some composition chops there because you really... The way you juxtapose all the instruments and the voices, it's pretty sophisticated.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. You know what? I grew up in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the first music I heard was soul music, mm-hmm. Philly soul, the Delphonics, Stylistics, and AM, anything that was on AM radio. And I have a sister who's 4 years older than me who would buy singles all the time, 45s, and we would play them in the driveway, and you know, we'd play whatever. And I remember the first 45 that she bought that just knocked me out. It was Ballroom Blitz by the Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Just the guitars and all that. And then I remember some early Badfinger stuff that we bought at the time. And that just stayed with me. I mean, I guess I had a musical inclination from the beginning, although my parents were never musical. I didn't really have it in my family. But it was something I kind of sought out. And I guess as I got into my adolescence and, you know, you're trying to find your way, that was my source of rebellion. You know, I'm going to play guitar. The Who, man. It's all about The Who and the Stones and stuff. That was seventh grade. So we had I remember seventh grade, we had an imaginary band. We never actually played, but everybody was like, okay, you're going to be the lead guitar player. You're going to be the drummer. So it was like a study hall band that never actually existed. We even had a name. We had the whole thing. I was the only guy in that whole band that actually continued on with music. Everybody kind of like fell back into doing something else. But it was a bug that never left. And mm-hmm. I remember... As a kid, you know, 16, we used to just jam. Jamming was the thing, man. Get together with your buddies and jam. And for some reason, in the small town I grew up in that was a little bit north of Philadelphia, there was a lot of good guitar players. For some reason, it must have been in the water or something. There's always great guitar players in my school. One guy, his name is Pete Smizer, went to high school with Pete. He's an incredible jazz guitar player now, and he's off the charts incredible. But anyway, I'm getting off the track there. The music was just kind of innate. By the time I graduated high school, I was in rock bands. We were doing style, you know, mm-hmm. all that stuff. And then I kind of got into jazz. My guitar teacher kind of steered me in that direction. And he turned me on to Berklee College of Music. And I remember when I first graduated high school, there was a year lapse there that I didn't go to. Well, actually, I went to Penn State for one semester
mm-hmm.
because I guess I wanted to prove to my parents, okay, I can fall back on the music, you know, I'll study something else, but fall back on music. It sucked. It was horrible. I dropped out. I was unhappy. I was bummed. I was just depressed. Mm. And then the following year, I got accepted to Berklee, and it was a life-changing moment. I mean, the whole from then on, it was just no looking back.
Well, in Philly, there was a big club scene there, wasn't there?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of music. I mean, you might, as a younger kid, you couldn't go to the clubs, but
right.
Must have been influenced by that.
It was not in my orbit. Before Berklee, after I graduated Berklee and all that stuff, I kind of moved back to Philadelphia again and kind of reintegrated into the rock scene again, because for 4 years it was nothing but jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't listen to anything except for maybe my last semester of Berklee. I started to get into like alternative music, like REM and stuff like that, and it kind of brought me back. It was like taking off on a plane, and here I am at the jazz world, and then I'm slowly coming back down into the rock and roll land again with everything I got that I took with me. And from then forward, in those following Berklee years, I got into a band called Wanderlust, and we had some regional success. You know, we got signed to RCA Records. We toured with Collective Soul for a year. We opened for The Who. We did a lot of stuff, and we almost broke into something that was would have been something, whatever. And that kind of reintroduced me to the club scene, I guess, as you're speaking about in Philadelphia. Yeah, that's when I got into the scene.
Well, when you were at Berkeley, now, what was the scene like in Boston?
Oh, well...
Was it all predominantly jazz, or was there a lot of other stuff happening?
Everything was happening. My radar was very highly focused on jazz.
And traditional jazz or fusion?
Traditional jazz.
Oh, okay.
Fusion as far as like John Scofield and stuff like that. But never like fusion, like, well, it's hard to say because that stuff all was on the periphery. It was there, but my choice was to focus more on straight ahead stuff. Mm-hmm. And as I progressed in the years at Berkeley, it got more and more into straight ahead jazz, like really straight ahead jazz. And it was an incredible time at Berkeley. I feel fortunate to have been there when I was, because some amazing players came out. You know, they were the students while I was there. A guitar player named Kurt Rosenwinkel, who's one of the foremost jazz players in the world today, was there at the time. A tenor saxophonist named Mark Turner, he was there. Danilo Perez, an incredible piano player. Jordy Rossi, drummer. Brad Mildow was kind of floating in and out. A lot of great, great players, and everybody was very inspired. It was a great time.
I'm going to play a clip that I think kind of shows a little bit of what your influence, especially from Philly. And this is an interesting, because a lot of the album, a lot of the guitars on the album, you do a nice, really great distortion. You get a really great, but this one's kind of clean.
Oh, okay.
And it's a little, it has a little jazz feel to it, but it's very funky. I really like it. It's called Real Love.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll play the clip, and then we'll talk about how you did it.
Sure.
Cool.
Thanks.
And I recommend to the listeners, when you download this, listen to this in headphones. There's a lot of stuff going on.
I'm glad you said that, Jeff. You know, because when I mix, well, actually when I record and mix, I do it exclusively in headphones.
Oh, really?
So I grew up like with headphones on my head. I might as well be, I might as well have them sewn to my skull. Yeah, I mean, there's something special about hearing something that has that thing that you don't get when it's in front of you. When it's wrapped around your ears, you have more of a spatial experience, I guess.
Well, I cut it so there's the guitar parts. I pulled the old guitar parts, but the song is a song, and there's a lot of vocals, and you heard a little bit of the background vocals in there, and that's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of things going on there. Mm-hmm. How do you talk a little bit about your songwriting and your approach? Because the way you arrange, it's a distinctive and a unique, at least to me, it's interesting how you get, and also as a producer, how you get that clarity.
Thanks.
Because there's a lot of stuff going on there, and it's real easy to get mushy.
It is real easy to get mushy, and trust me, it's the bane of my existence being a recording person. You know, it's I struggle and I work hard to make mixes. I mean, I think I might have mixed that one for several months. I don't know. I'm still not happy with things. You know, mm-hmm, it's like to me, there's so much mush that I do have to get around because there is a lot of layers, and I'm trying to be more subtractive now in my mm-hmm. approach to arranging. In terms of the songwriting itself, some songs on these records came about as maybe a verse and a chorus, and then I laid it down and I kind of almost fully arranged it just as a verse and a chorus. And from then it kind of grew. It's like a recording song. I don't know what the term of that would be. You know, where you are actually writing as you're recording. I don't know. It's a different way of writing, I guess. Some were like that. Others were complete songs written acoustically, and then, bam, I recorded them and layered it from there. In terms of, like, how I approach them, it's really a matter of taste. I don't do it in a systematic or a formulaic way. I don't mm-hmm. know. I don't... Stuff that I learned at Berkeley is not directly influenced when I'm doing this stuff. It's more innate. If it doesn't sound right to me, I'll change it. If there's not enough of something, I'll put more in. If, you know, it's just all...
Well, when you're putting in, like, when you're doing, like, those vocals, I mean, they're chordally and harmonically, what you're doing there is pretty sophisticated. Do you write that out?
I don't write it out, no. I don't.
That's head charts. Then you're just doing
it. Yeah, and if something doesn't work, I'll make it until something does work, you know? I mean, I'm influenced by a lot of great singers that do that, like Todd Rundgren, you know? Todd's all about layer and vocals, and it's a beautiful thing. I don't know.
That's amazing, because that to be able to integrate all of that I know singers that I've worked with in sessions that did that, but mm-hmm. that's incredible.
It happens fast. It just when you're laying something down for me, when I'm doing something, I will try something else, and I'll try to put something on top, and if it works, it doesn't. If it does, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's really trial and error.
Well, I'm going to play another clip that kind of shows that kind of layer. This one reminded me very Beatle-ish and kind of both Beatles and Beach Boy-ish.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of vocals. And also, too, you're doing a very cool slide guitar in here. Uh-huh. This is called Fooled Myself. So let me play this clip real quick. So you hear a little bit, I mean, there's the vocals, this stuff, and there's a couple mm-hmm. of slide parts. There's a dual part, and then there's another one way in the back in the reverb back there. And it all works, and it's clear. Yeah. I mean, you can to me, I know that's not easy to mix to get all that clarity.
No, and a lot of things come about through happy accidents. Mm-hmm. You know, things will be... that, for instance, I think the secondary slide part that you hear in the back may have been... a different take that I didn't use, and then I thought, well, hey, it's still there. And mm-hmm. then I heard them together, and it's like, oh, that kind of works. I'm going to kind of make it work. You know, it's like, I don't know, if you're a sculptor or something and you accidentally hit your thumb and you make a big thumb imprint, and you're like, you stand back, well, that looks like, I don't know, a butt cheek. I don't know, whatever, you know? It's like then you form it, and you kind of mold it, and you shape it, and wow, there it is. It was a happy accident, but it became something. I believe in that kind of stuff that makes recordings better, makes mm-hmm. songs better. I love that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, that style of recording where you have all these little... To me, that when you listen to the album, every time you listen to it, you're hearing something else. So it's nice to have those little ear candy, Easter eggs, so to speak.
Exactly. And, you know, I did all these myself at home, by myself. Partly because I'm a reclusive introvert, and partly because I'm a control freak and everything. But, you know, there's more unapologetic room to experiment and trash things and build things up at any moment, you know?
Right.
You don't have to deal with hurting someone's feelings if you cut some take or you do something to something else. Plus, you know exactly what you want, generally.
Yeah. So you're playing, and that's another thing that's very cool. You're playing all the instruments.
Yeah.
And that must affect also too when you're because you're the music director for Wilson Phillips as a because you can play all the parts, it must make it a little easier for you directing the band because you hear everything.
Sort of like that. Although the band that we have now, it's kind of there's less musical direction, and it's more like here, if we're learning a new song, here, learn this. Okay, we come to the rehearsal. Okay, bam, done. It's really little. There's little whipping, you know, cracking the whip on anybody.
Right.
However, when the girls do go out, they'll do track dates. In other words, they'll sing to backing tracks, and I basically recorded all the backing tracks that they sing to. It's literal reproductions of all their songs.
Now the live charts, are those your charts?
Live, we don't have charts. There's no charts. It's like, here, learn the parts. Okay, come in and we play, and that's it. make our own individual
notes. But are the parts
notes.
Derived from what you did in the backing tracks?
No, because actually the backing tracks came at a later date. No, what we do live, we just learned and rehearsed ourselves without, like, here, you do this, that, and that. No, it's more like trusting the other musicians.
Well, you guys, and you know each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I want to play another clip that kind of shows a little more of your versatility. This one, it just blew me, because I heard this, I'm like, did he play this pedal steel? I'm like, okay, I'm going to look this up, and it says he played all the instruments, so I guess he played all of it. So this one's really, 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 it's a beautiful piece of music, and what I want to show on this one, here it is. It's called Almost Blue. Let me play this clip, and listen to what he's doing, because there's at the beginning, some of the little fills, you got to listen in the background. He's got the pedal steel, it's like a darker, rich, that traditional, and then all of a sudden you get this real glassy, chimey, very bright sound, but it's really cool. It's a very interesting sound. So take a listen and see if you can hear it, and then we'll talk about how you did that. So you can hear that the second verse, it gets that real glassy type of sound. Now, was that different takes, or was
it? Yeah, that was a different take. I'm really not a good pedal player at all.
I don't know. That sounded really good. You got all the slides in it.
Pro Tools can make you sound really good. No, it was a lot of splicing of stuff, because I knew what I wanted it to sound like. I'm just not accomplished enough as a pedal player to actually do it. So I kind of had to manipulate and stuff. But yeah, I mean, the second part of that, it was meant to be more of a solo out front kind of a thing. And I think I recorded, I have, it's a 10 string, it's a ZB student, I don't know, from the late 60s pedal steel. I really know little about it.
Now, did you do that through an amp?
No, I didn't do it through an amp. I think I did it through a pod.
Okay.
I don't remember what the setting was. Oh, yeah. Was it a pod? Or it might have been one of those Vox Tone Lab like amp simulator things. And I think I had some compression on there too somewhere in the chain. But everything is trial and error when I'm recording. Unfortunately, I don't write enough things down. Like, this sounded good. I'm going to write this down because maybe I can do it again. I usually unplug stuff and then I forget. And I've been getting better, but.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the recording now. Mm-hmm. Do you do a lot of the stuff direct, or do you do use mics on the guitars? I mean, obviously the acoustic guitars are mics.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean the your electric guitars, your leads. Yeah.
I would say it's 50-50. I have a couple of cabinets that are actually mic'd up. They're permanently mic'd, and I can run. They're in a box because I live, you know, I can't crank the amps up all the time. I made this little isolation box that the cabinet is in, and it has two mics on it. One of them, I have a SM57 and a Royer R121, and they're kind of like parallel. I don't know how, they're just right in front of the speaker. And I can basically put any amp into that cabinet by, you know, I have a box that will change the ohmage of whatever the amp is to match with the cabinet. So I will record live because I like to have the air, you know, I like to feel the air.
Oh, yeah,
That, and I might mix that with something from the pod or whatever, you know, to get kind of a fuller sound. But it's really...
Now, what's in the cabinet? Are they Celestians or are you using...
Yeah, I have two actual cabinets that are mic'd up. One is an Orange 212 cabinet. Mm-hmm. That I run, you know, I'll run the Orange 8030 head through that, or a Marshall JCM 900, or an Epiphone valve, whatever the heck it is. And the other is a smaller cabinet that has one Celestian 12-inch, yes.
Okay.
A greenback. And that I will run a Fender, usually a Vibrochamp, the little 8-inch Vibrochamp. I run the guts out into that speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a great little Boss BD2, what is it called? The Blues Driver, whatever.
Blues Driver.
It's a Keeley modded Blues Driver. It sounds great in front of the the Vibrochamp and into the cabinet. So I use that a lot too.
Now, what did he do to it? Do you know?
I don't know what he did to it, but it sounds better.
Is it?
It has more of a frequency range, and I don't even know.
Is it brighter than the standard one?
It's less boxy sounding than the standard one. Okay. It has just more body to it. I don't know what it is. There's like some little switch he put on it, and I'm really not as technically minded enough to tell you specifically.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
It sounds great. I mean, thanks. From what I'm hearing on the different, we'll play one of the rockers in a minute.
Yeah.
The that sounds. I mean, it really sounds great. The
another great combination. Not to interrupt you. I have an SG Custom, which I love. Gibson SG Custom. It's the cream colored with the three gold pickups. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. I run that into an old Rat, one of the big box Rats, you know, that doesn't have the LED. It's just the old ones. That goes into the Orange and into the Orange cabinet, and it has a great, you know, overdriven sound.
So you're not really pushing the speakers. It's all through you're using the distortion devices to get the grit.
I find that when I don't have some kind of distortion box in front of the amp, it's a little dark. And I almost use the overdrive pedal to brighten it up and to add maybe a little crunch. But no, they are being driven. They're definitely being driven.
So you're getting the amp is distorting.
Yes.
It's not just in the pedal.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
And it's within that box, so I can actually crank it up pretty loud and you still can't, you know, the neighbors don't complain.
Well, let me play a clip. This one's from the Freeway album. It's called Magnetic, and it's interesting. I cut together a couple of the verse where you can hear the leads, and he does some interesting stuff. The first part you're crunching away, and then you have this one guitar that you just like arpeggiate the chord and hold it, and it kind of sustains. Very cool sound. I'm going to ask you what you used on all of this.
Okay.
Then you do a lead where you kind of scat with your voice. I cut to that, and then there's this full-blown lead at the end. But this kind of gives you an idea. I think probably what we were talking about, the setup, I assume that you had used these cabinets and stuff, that this song will demonstrate that. Yeah. So here's Magnetic. Take a listen to this.
Trying to fit a circle in a square. looking for connection, no one's there. Does anybody care?
There's a lot of stuff going on in there.
That song, I don't think I ever worked on a lyric harder than that. It was really forced, I have to say. I rewrote and rewrote and rewrote and rewrote. I just could not find. I'm still not happy with the lyric, but that was fun. That was kind of another wow. Where you hear that solo thing go out the end and into that kind of cascading.
Mm-hmm.
That was meant to go into a whole other section that was I scrapped. It didn't work. So that might have been one of the very first things I laid down on that song was that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting how things come together and fall together. Another cool thing I use in that song, there's like a synthy sounding pad underneath. Down, down, and ticka ticka down. There's like a really ethereal synthy thing. That's an old. It's called a space station.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what those things are?
Yeah.
I forget who met Digitech. Digitech mm-hmm. Space
yeah,
Station.
Yeah, the space station.
There's one setting on it. I think it's number 7 or something that has like that beautiful shimmery thing.
Yeah.
That's what that is. That's the.
And then there's something you do also, too. Again, the cool thing is how you have all those voices and they don't get in, the guitars don't get in the way of them. Mm-hmm. And there's something I think you guys, you do like a fall, vocal fall, mm-hmm. and then you reverb it. So it's just like.
Yes.
Very cool.
I love that.
I mean, but it's those little things that make it really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That's what attracted me to so much music growing up. You know, I love that kind of stuff. That's why I like to try to keep that in my stuff too.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's great, and it's nice. But those are those guitars that chunk guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the orange or was that?
You know what? I think that. It probably was the orange, and I may have used one of those electroharmonics, Pogs.
Oh, the Pog?
The Pog that has the high and the low octave thing.
Oh, okay.
And just subtly mixed in there to give it more of a meat.
And then that, like, guitar that you do, like, an arpeggio and just holds.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Yes, that's, I can't remember, I stole that from something, and I can't remember. It might have been, like, you know, the band Let's Active.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch Easter's
mm-hmm.
band. I may have stolen it from one of their songs or something.
No, it's a very, but like it's a very cool sound. Now that,
yeah.
Now what guitars were you using on that? We should talk about that too. Do you remember?
It's written down on the session. I'm going to say because I use it most of my songs. It's probably my Butterscotch Telecaster.
Okay,
it's a 52 reissue Tele, and I instead of the stock pickups, I switched the bridge pickup, and I put a DiMarzio Chopper T. Which is a stacked mm-hmm, single mm-hmm, coil. Mm-hmm. It just has more bite and body or whatever, and it's better for recording, I find. Gibson guitars I'll use for certain things, but they have a very distinctive character where the fenders are more transparent and are more
well. What's
malleable.
The chunk guitar? Dun, 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 dun.
I'm going to say it's the Tele.
That's the Tele too.
I'm going to say it's the Telecaster.
So you probably you use the fenders more than that.
Yeah,
and then all the leads are the Tele too.
more than likely, or the Stratocaster.
Yeah. Okay, so it's single coil. No, I mean, it's great.
Well, no, they're not single coils. They're stacked.
It's kind of humbucking. Yeah,
they still have the single coil. Yeah,
yeah. Because you're getting it's getting that real bright, that Tele sound. I mean, it's getting...
But it's not... It doesn't have the spank of a Tele. I know.
Yeah, but it has a really, really neat sound.
Thanks.
Let me see. Now, let's... let me ask you this. As opposed to recording, how do you do that live? I know you can't do all the vocals live, but I mean, how do you approach your live setup as opposed to what do you use live in terms of equipment?
In terms of my own stuff, I haven't played live with a band per se in probably 7 years or so. I'm doing a solo thing now. It's more like I just haven't had the inclination to get a band together as much as I want to get a band together. Anybody out there want to be in a band? Because I want to play this stuff, all this stuff. All this music I can only really represent as a solo performer, you know?
Like, right.
And some of it translates better than others. Like, I can't really do magnetic live. It's not really... It doesn't translate as well without a full production, kind of like... So...
You need a lot of vocals. You need a good. You need a good three or four guys fully going at it.
Yeah, pretty
but,
much.
I mean, it's great. I mean, but I mean, in terms of let's say like with Wilson Phillips. What mm-hmm. What's your rig for that?
Sure, my rig with Wilson Phillips. I have. I play acoustic and electric. I would say 50-50. My acoustic guitar is. The Gibson Jumbo. It's a Jumbo SJ200. Mm-hmm. I use, for the pickup, I took out the stock Gibson pickup and put in a Fishman Natural Matrix, which they don't make anymore. This is the one that doesn't have any volume control or tone. It's just straight in. It's just the transducer thing in there. I have to find those things on eBay because they don't make them anymore. And the acoustic guitar goes through a little polytune tuner, and it goes straight into the direct input. Whatever.
Into the PA.
Yeah. And I get a lot of compliments from sound people because we don't travel with our own sound. We go house to house. We use the house sound. For some reason, the Fishman pickup and that guitar combination sounds great, and it always has always worked. Electric, I have... Lately, I've been going out with a Duesenberg. Mm-hmm. It's a Duesenberg Star Player TV, it's called. Great guitar. They're German-made instruments. They're kind of a boutique-y. Some people know about them, and some people don't. But it's kind of like a hybrid of a Les Paul and a Gretsch. Mm-hmm. It's a semi-hollow body guitar, shaped sort of like a Les Paul. Longer scale neck.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful guitar. The tremolo on it is flawless. They're spectacular instruments. I can't say enough about them. I have a pretty good-sized pedal board, and I'm going to try to go through it from memory. I go into a Carl Martin compressor.
Mm-hmm.
From the Carl Martin compressor, it goes into the Klon, the J-Rocket Archer, which is a Klon clone overdrive pedal. That goes into an old Nobels ODR1 pedal. This is an old one. They've reintroduced them, but this is the older one. It sounds amazing, but it's been recased
because
they were made really cheaply, but they sound beautiful. That goes into another overdrive pedal, usually the full-tone OCD. And then I go into a boost pedal with the EP boost.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, I've been going into a secondary EP boost because I use two different boosts with two different overdrives. I'm a big component of the of stacking the overdrives, tone stacking, and then from there I have, I think I go into a GE7 compressor. Out of that, I have a Strymon Deco.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Deco. It gives you that the end of Starship Trooper, that Steve Howe bit where it's real flangy but very kind of realistic and kind of random. Mm-hmm. That's what the Deco does. And then out of the Deco, I go into a Strymon Blue Sky Reverb that has a nice shimmer thing, a nice effect. And out of that, I go into a Line 6 DL4 delay, and then from that, I'm out.
It's interesting that you have compression going into the system and after the overdrive. Because you have it coming out before you go into the processors.
Yeah, well, yeah, the compressor is the first thing it goes into.
Yeah, but that you have another compressor after, right? You just said that you had another one after.
The EP boost?
No, after the EP boost.
No, no, they're overdrives. They're all overdrives.
But you mentioned another compressor.
The ODR1?
Was it? No.
The OCD, the EP boost, the J-Rocket Archer. I have a GE7. That's no, it's not a compressor, it's an EQ.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
EQ, yeah.
All right. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. Because I know people have done that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what's the amps? Where are you going?
Amp, I usually use a, it's a Fender Blues DeVille. I'm sorry, Blues Deluxe. It's the 112. Only because, you know, we ran our back line, so it's like they're very easy to come by. They're pretty malleable amps. You can, you know, dial in a fairly decent sound, and then through all the pedals and stuff, it's like whatever it is.
Now, is that cranked or is it?
It is probably on three, so it's kind of right at the edge of breaking up, but not quite. Those get pretty loud, but I have my own at home that's actually been modified to have more headroom so that I can use the pedals more for the overdrive and whatnot.
So you're all of it's from the pedals,
pretty much, yeah.
And you're just using one amp, or do you have it in stereo?
Sometimes in stereo, yeah. It depends on the venue, but yeah, I'll split them off into stereo. I can do that with.
Oh, okay.
It comes out of the DL4 delay, and it's a beautiful sound, you know.
Oh yeah, I can imagine those. And those are good little amps.
They're
really
workhorses.
Nice.
They're workhorses. Yeah.
And then what electric guitars do you use?
I use the Duesenberg primarily.
Just the Duesenberg. You don't bring one of the Gibsons.
Not on the road, I don't know.
Oh, okay, no, I'll blame you.
I have so much crap. I lug the most stuff around of all the guys in the band, and it's annoying. My pedal board weighs exactly 50 pounds, so you know whenever we're checking the thing, you know if it's over a pound, which sometimes the scales are a little off, then I got to rip a pedal out of it, and just, otherwise you got to pay the extra. It's terribly annoying.
But you don't bring spare guitars with you?
I don't, only because it's too much of a pain to have to haul that stuff around.
Well, that's a credit to those guitars that they hold up.
Never
like that.
Broke a string. Ever.
Ever.
That's knocking on pressed cardboard.
No, that's pretty amazing.
Never,
that's
never did,
that's
yeah.
Oh man, yeah. That.
You know, I use tens too. I mean, they're fairly nimble string. Not this guitar. I have a different guitar in my hand here. I used to use 11s, but my fingers were getting kind of chewed up.
Are you using tens on the acoustics too?
No, I use 12s.
12s on the acoustics.
12s on the acoustics, yes.
No, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't bend on those, so it's like, you know. It's just the, the D'Addario EJ16s, I guess they are, is what they're called, the 12s.
No, you're lucky. No, I played a gig, and I broke a string, grabbed a second guitar, broke that string, grabbed a third guitar, and broke that string.
Oh, no.
That's happened.
That's bad luck. That's just bad luck. You should have bought a lottery ticket after that. But you know, a lot of it has to do, too, with your picks. What are you using for your pick and the string itself? For acoustics, I use a different pick than I do for my electrics. I have it's the Dunlop, I don't know, the 63s for acoustic, the orange ones. They're more flexible. So for acoustic, I'm not.
They're like a medium?
This is like just below a medium. For electric, with Wilson Phillips and other live applications, I use the yellow one, which is slightly heavier.
And then when you play jazz, do you use a harder pick?
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, well, you ready to go down this road? Okay.
Uh-huh.
I went through a crisis a couple of years ago of I cannot find the right pick, and I went nuts. I'll tell you where I've settled here. There's this company called Blue Chip, and the pick that I chose is called the TAD-50. Now, that comes in a triangular shape, and I actually have to kind of file it down, and I saw it. By the way, these picks are $35 each.
Wow.
$35 each. I have a bunch of these. This is a stone pick. This was like maybe $40. So anyway, and then another company called Red Bear makes incredible picks too. Here they are. Mm-hmm. These are about $30 each. But they feel so good. You never want to go back to regular
picks. So you like a real heavy pick when you do jazz?
When I do jazz, yes. Absolutely. For whatever reason, I don't know. It's just
all my friends that play jazz. They're real. I mean, here, check my pick out. I'm like, wow.
I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of having to pay $35 a pick.
Yeah,
believe me, I hold on to this. Like
yeah, but they don't wear out.
They don't wear out.
Those picks.
I'm assuming it's made of bakelite. I don't know what else it could be. It's incredibly hard to fix. You know, I file these down. I have a grinder at home, like a shop grinder. Mm-hmm. I have to grind it, and then I polish it, and then I sand it. It's a whole ritual.
That's amazing.
But I am by nature a tinkerer, I guess you could say. So I kind of almost love to do that kind of stuff.
Well, that's cool.
as frustrating as it is.
But that's the thing. Those type of picks, they won't wear out. They just, especially those stone ones. I've seen those at NAMM.
Yeah.
And
the company that I bought it from, I'm not going to say who it was, but they're like, these will preserve your strings, but they don't. They chop the strings to hell. If you've got a wound string, it'll just completely wear the wound away until it snaps.
Really? Really?
Yeah, so, but they sound nice, but they just wear the string down.
Well, speaking of strings, what strings do you use?
Okay, here we go down another rabbit hole. For the jazz guitar, which is what I have in my hands here, this is I have a 67 ES-335. This is my baby. I use Tomastic Infeld George Benson GR-116s, and I changed the top string, which is from the factory, it's a 12. I put a 13 on it. Mm-hmm. So it's like a 13, I don't know, 7, 13, 17. It's a wound 22, maybe. I want to say this is like a 36, 46, 52. Something like that. It's the GR, George Benson GR-116s, made by Tomastic Infeld. Mm-hmm. And my God, they're $40 a pack. So, I keep these strings on for months.
Okay, so they don't
wear out very quickly. Yeah, okay. they're worth it, but they're pretty pricey. For my other electric guitars, for like rock applications or whatever, I use the standard D'Addario XL-110s or whatever they are, the 10s.
And then what about the acoustic guitars?
Acoustic, I use the EJ-16s by D'Addario as well.
Okay.
Those are 12s. Phosphor bronze, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, yeah, because it's you get a nice tinkly sound, which actually leads me to this next clip, because we're going to talk a little bit about tunings.
Yeah.
This is called Throw Me a Line, and this is interesting. I've got a question. I'm not going to say anything until we hear the piece, because I have a very important question to ask you about this one. Okay. Here we go. This is Throw Me a Line.
This is my life, this is the road for me. I hope to take what's true, giving back to you what I have found. Throw me a line. I guess it's up to me to live my life honestly, but there's an ache in my heart. Hopefulness used to be. Try to keep it in mind, but sometimes it's hard for me. I know good days will come around again, and if I keep my eyes open wide, and if I keep my head.
Now, I presume that's the telly.
Nope.
That's not the Tele.
That was the that's a Gibson 345.
Oh, wow. That's a great sound.
Thanks.
But the reason I was playing the clip, actually, that's a beautiful lead.
Thank you.
But I wanted to talk about the acoustic guitar, because you're using a non-standard tuning on that, right?
Yes, I am. I'm using... First of all, I for most of my songs, I have I'm in E flat. Okay, so so this particular song is in open D, but it's flat, so it's open D flat. Now instead of going to, I tune this one down a half step, so I call it open D flat major 7.
Oh wow,
that's what I call it.
That's a nice sound. That's a really nice sound.
Thanks, and I don't even know where it comes from. You know, it's just like. I get bored when I'm writing of the same shapes. Mm-hmm. So when I'm in a standard open tuning like this, you just come up with shapes and you start to figure out things and you go where you wouldn't normally go.
Right.
So.
And that's the guitar you use on there. The sound of that guitar. That's the J 200, right?
This is my J 200 blonde guitar. Yeah. Uh huh. So
that's a beautiful sound. Now,
thanks.
I got a question for you. You modulate in the song.
Are you talking about the bridge?
Yeah, it goes. Now, do you still steep that tuning,
yes, I do.
Did you have to overdub?
No. So check it out. How do I get back into the bridge? I forget. But anyway, the bridge is this. If I keep my eyes open wide, if I keep my head held high, maybe I'll be one with myself. The one's a good place to start again. Whatever, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm like, how did...
Just different voicings.
Because you're still getting that like open sound. The way you're playing, way you're chording it, you're still getting that.
Yeah.
So that's a great song.
Thank you.
We're already out of time. I told you this would go fast.
We'll have to go part two sometime.
Yeah. Oh, part two, three, four, five. I mean, I didn't even cover it.
And then we got to take the callers.
Yeah. But real quick, Lori... I want to know where you're playing. You've got a bunch of stuff that's happening.
There's a lot of things happening. There's a great show coming up. Lori, you want to give me a little love on that one too? We're called The Tribe. Okay, this is a collective of musicians in Los Angeles, and we do. This is our third benefit show. It's going to be at the El Rey. The theme of the show is it's called California Saga. So we're kind of paying homage to. The late 60s, early 70s singer-songwriters from Southern California. Mm-hmm. So there's a vast array of music from Beach Boys all the way through Carole King and James Taylor and...
Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
There you go.
And the
CSN,
Eagles.
It's going to be a great show.
Jackson Brown.
So this will be two nights at the El Rey, June 24th and June 25th, Friday and Saturday.
Coming right up this weekend,
yes.
And it's benefiting five local charities, which is great. 100% of the proceeds will go to those five local charities. And I think, Jeff, you're going to post our flyer up.
Well, and I posted the
commercial.
The commercial is really cool.
Everybody seems to love the commercial.
There's a little video, so I'll post it again, too.
I haven't seen that.
Look on Facebook.
It's very cool. Then also, too, Wilson Phillips is playing?
Wilson Phillips is playing at the Rose on July 9th.
July 9th at the Rose. That's correct. It'll be full band.
It's in Pasadena.
And he might go stereo.
I might go stereo. I don't know. I might.
And then Rob comes along with my
Lori does a great she
frequent
does a, yeah.
singer-songwriter showcase.
She does a great singer-songwriter showcase at the E-Spot most of the time, right? And it's kind of an ongoing series of things, and I've been lucky enough to be a part of several of them. So I'm looking forward to that. It's July 24th.
July 24th.
That's my birthday,
really
too,
cool.
By the way.
Oh, very cool.
Celebrating
cool.
His birthday.
Celebrate my birthday.
We usually have four artists play on that night, and it should be a lot of fun, which is upstairs from Vitello's Italian Restaurant in Studio City.
Great vibe, great food, great times, great music.
And, yeah, great music. I mean, just your playing is just amazing.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really...
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on
to the
show. And then also, too, any new album coming?
I have enough songs for a new album. However, I have not yet recorded them. So,
okay, so that's
working
in the
on that. Yes.
Well, we definitely that alone is an excuse
Thanks.
To have you come back.
Oh my God!
So
I'd
no, we just touched
and I have I have some jazz to play too. That's kind of my other my I live a duplicitous lifestyle. I'm a jazz guitar player as well. So we didn't really get to talk about that, which is fine. But
that's for another show. I'll have to. That'll be good. Actually, the we'll have to do a show just on the jazz alone. Anyway, I want to thank you again, and Lori, thank you for putting this together.
Thank you, Lori, this is a treat.
This is a real treat.
So fun.
And so I'm going to close with "I Am Tomorrow." Do you want to kind of set up the song a little bit? Any story?
This is just kind of like a happy-go-lucky, you know. Don't think about today. Don't think about tomorrow. Think about today. Live in the moment, kind of thing.
Okay.
Know? It was kind of a fun
and then
song.
Anything guitar wise.
Guitar wise, no. This is pretty much a straight rocking song. This was probably a Telecaster through the Orange.
Okay.
Yeah. Vis-a-vis the Rat.
Okay, the Rat. Okay, well, everybody, thank you again. And both of you guys, thank you for coming down. And these, we'll take some pictures. These guitars, you got to see these guitars. This is the I Am Tomorrow. Check out these albums, Mea Culpa, Bring on the Happy, and the other one was Freeway.
RobBonfiglio.com. RobBonfiglio.
The G is silent.
The G is silent.
Yeah, so everybody, check out these albums. You'll really like them. The song craftsmanship is great, and if you like lush vocals, these songs deliver. So,
thank you.
All right, everybody, have a great night. Here is I Am Tomorrow.
You say you love me for what I'm not.